Glenn Parfitt sitting in for Susan Woods this week, and the show is sponsored by the Maritime Museum of British Columbia in Victoria. Today we're going to talk about music, as I always do when I come and host these shows for Susan, and we're going to be talking about music through the 50s, 60s, and 70s today. We've got a couple of great guests in the studio today, arguably the first rock and roller in Victoria's history, Jim Smith's. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how you doing, Glenn?
Good, man. Thanks for coming and joining me, and a good friend of Jim's, Harry Creech. Hey, Harry.
Hey, Glenn. How you doing?
Thanks for coming in, Harry, as well, too.
You're more than welcome.
These are a couple of guys who've really got some stories to tell us, so we're going to get into that in just a little bit. We've just want to make mention of the fact that the Royal City Music Project is what's behind a lot of what we do with music history in town, and it's also sponsored by Jazz Fest International 2006. And later on in the show today, we're going to be giving away some tickets to Jazz Fest 2006. One show in particular, Leonard and Samples, featuring Bill Sample, who's an icon of the local Victoria music scene. And he also has a bass player in his band, Brian Newcomb, who is pretty much in about the same category himself. So we'll be giving away tickets to that show. That's at Central Bar and Grill on the 24th of June, Saturday. And also we've got tickets to Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings at Market Square on Sunday, June 25th, 2006. So listen, for later on in the show, we'll tell you how you're going to win a chance to get those. So we're going to start off with Jim today. Now, Jim has got quite a storied history, but we'll let him tell you most of it. Jim, you began music in Victoria at an early age, but before even beginning music, you grew up here, you were born here. What were sort of early influences for you that made you sort of think about wanting to play music and embark on this career?
Well, the earlier influences come from my mom's sisters, who I lived near, and they all liked the country music. And I was introduced to, you know, people like Hank Williams and that kind of thing as a small child, you know. That was some of my first recollections. And my dad, he liked the swing stuff. And so I was definitely influenced by everything I heard at that age.
So there was a lot of music around your house, basically, when you were growing up.
Oh, indeed there was, yeah.
Great. Now, you yourself were, sort of tell us how you got involved. You got a very interesting story about how you were invited to be part of a music thing that was being put together at the time. Tell us that story, if you would, please.
How we got together with it. Well, I met Norm Pringle. I guess I could start there. When I was a teenager, you know, we'd been listening to the Hit Parade on TV and all that kind of thing. And then along came Bill Haley with Rock Around the Clock, and we'd never heard anything quite like it before. And so we thought, this is really something. And of course, after Bill Haley, it was Elvis Presley. And that was one of the most amazing phenomena of the 50s, in my opinion, and the world, I think. So I was at a dance down at the Sirocco Club one night, and being silly, was dancing all over the floor and imitating some of the songs that Elvis was doing as I was dancing with a young lady. And Norm came to me and said, would you like to go on television and imitate Elvis? And I was shocked at first, but I finally agreed to go do it and went on the house party thing on Channel 6. And the first thing I did was Poor Boy, which was from the movie Love Me Tender. And so it just took off from there, that kind of thing. It lasted a little while.
So originally you started off your career just as doing miming and sort of emulating other
That's
entertainers.
Right. Yeah.
At what point did it change and all of a sudden you actually would begin to sing and play? Tell us about that.
Well, about a year after doing the miming thing, there was a great big benefit show done at Chuck TV, and they had a bunch of different acts come in and do things, and I was asked to go and participate. And we were raising money for, I think it was muscular dystrophy or something like that. And there was a group there, a guy who played guitar and sang Hank Williams songs and had a bass player. And he was an excellent guitar player, and so was the bass player. And I was approached by the guitar player, whose name is Peter Saganovich. And he asked me, he said, do you sing songs? Do you actually sing and play? And I said, well, I sing along with the records, and I'm pretty close to what he does, you know. He said, well, let's get together. And so we did. We got together, and he introduced himself to my mom and dad, and we had practices over there, and Pete taught me how to play the chords on the guitar and stuff. And then we hit the road, you know. We got a manager and everything else, and we played the island from Courtney to Campbell River to Nanaimo, Cowichan Bay, in municipal halls and things like that.
So this would have been late 50s then that you were doing this?
Yeah, late 50s. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden it's the late 50s and you've got a career going on and it's starting to peak on the island and looking past there. So as you're going along doing this, did you carry on? Did something sort of put the process on hold? What happened from there?
Well, our bass player, he joined the RCMP and went back east. After we'd been playing a couple of years, and I was getting older, and I had to get a steady job, and I was looking towards matrimonial with my wife, and so we got married, and things sort of, settled down a little bit. But I never stopped doing it. I always loved the guitar, and Pete, he said, "Oh, I'm getting too old for this now, Jim." He says, "But I know a guy named Gary Wilcox." He said that I work with, and. He said, "I'll introduce you to him." So he did, and that's how I ran into Harry. He came over there one day and was doing some recording, and Harry and I became quite friendly together, and the rest is history.
There you go. Well, that takes us up to about 1964, if I believe, 63, 64. So we're going to talk to Harry. Now, Harry, you come from a musical family. You basically grew up with a father as a musician. Tell us about that and what it was like growing up.
Yeah, well, my dad he was a bandsman in the Army during the Second World War, and when he came out of the Army, he started playing at the Crystal Gardens every week with a band or an orchestra, I guess they would have said in those days, the Bert Zella, and so I was pretty used to, from the earliest age, I remember him going off to do that every Friday and Saturday night, and then... Sunday morning when I got up, his drums would be sitting in the living room because he'd bring them home on Saturday nights. And so I would play with them, you know. And as I got older, I guess playing with them gradually turned into playing them. And at that point in time, I guess my main, music that I listened to was the music my parents listened to, which was swing music. All the greats, the Dorseys, Glenn Miller, Artie Shaw, all of the American icons. And rock and roll still was an unheard of thing then. And so I liked the way the drums smelt. I could smell the metal. I could smell the brass cymbals, you know. So what did you
change from just playing with the drums to actually playing the drums? What age do you think you were at when that transition happened?
I was probably, 13 or 14, I guess, when I started to actually play with other people, and it still wasn't serious at that point in time. It was just sometimes my dad gave lessons, and guys would come over and be around, and, you know, I'd sometimes sit in for a few minutes, but actually the very first person I ever played with as far as rock and roll is concerned is Brian Newcomb, who came over to my place after school one day. We both attended Vic High. And he told me one day that he had an electric guitar and an amplifier, and so I asked him if he cared to come over and play a bit, and he did. And I remember when give you some example. I mean, Brian was probably already headed towards professional playing at that point in time. Whereas I couldn't get over the fact that his parents would actually let him bring his guitar and his amplifier out of the house, you know, to go to somebody else's house.
Something unheard of at that age.
I was leading a fairly sheltered life at that time, which changed later.
As we all know, and we'll hear about later on in the show.
Yeah.
So that was that's interesting. And of course, Brian Newcomb, for those who don't know who Brian is, he's one of the players for Victoria. He also played in many bands growing up here. Some of the more well-known ones, Bobby Falls and the Strangers and whatever. Brian now lives and works out of Vancouver, is a session player and has just done some incredible work with some great names, Ray Charles, Celine Dion, David Foster, of course, and others. And we're hoping to have Brian on today, but he's just one of those guys that's just got such a busy schedule, we couldn't fit him in. So we'll look forward to hopefully hearing from him later on. We're also mentioning, too, earlier on in the show that we're going to be giving away tickets to the Leonard Sample Band at Central Bar and Grill. Of course, Brian is the bass player for Bill Sample and Sue Leonard's band, and we're going to be giving those tickets away on the break. And after the break, we're going to ask people to call in today and share a memory with us, or if they've ever played with Jim or Harry, to give a call in and say hi to your old bandmate. And everyone that calls in is going to be entered to win these tickets to see the Leonard Sample Band, and also the pair of tickets to see Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings at Market Square Courtyard. We're going to go to a break right now, but taking us out into the break, I think we're going to play something that was recorded by Jim Smith here. This is a little later on in his career. This is from 1985. And now, Jim, set this up. What brought you around to recording this? Was there some special event that made you record this?
Well, it was Harry and I who recorded it, and we just happened to be sitting around the studio, and he said, you know, you used to do the Elvis thing. And I said, yeah. He said, well, why don't we lay down a track or two? So we did, and that's how it came about. It was just spontaneous.
Yeah, passing fancy at that point in time.
So six decades you've been playing music, Jim. That just blows me away. You started in the 50s and you're still playing to this day. For those who don't know, we have the Hall of Fame that Jim and Harry both played at that opened in December of 2004. But right now we're going to take you out with Jim Smith from 1985 and his version of Blue Suede Shoes.
Well, it's a wonderful money. Well, you can do anything but lay off of my blue suede shoe. Well, you can burn my house, steal my car, drink my liquor from an old fruit jar. Do anything that you want to do, but honey, lay off them shoes and don't you step on my blue suede shoe.
Welcome back to Remember When. My name is Glenn Parfitt. I'm sitting in this week for Susan Woods. We're going to be asking people to call in and share some memories with us today. If you've got any stories you want to share with us or anything else with our guest in the studio today, Jim Smith and Harry Creech, the phone lines are open. You can call directly to our studio at 386-1161, or we'll pay the charges if you call in your cell at star 1070. And we've got tickets to give away today to two of the events at Jazz Fest International 2006, tickets to the Leonard Sample Band performance at Central Bar and Grill on Saturday the 24th, and tickets for Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings at Market Square Sunday, June 26th. Both shows part of Jazz Fest International this year, 2006. And we're talking to Harry and Jim earlier on about when they first met. We brought us up to about 1964, and had met at a friend's place by the name of Gary Wilcox, and Jim had spoken about knowing Gary and having Harry come over to visit and the two of them hooking up. So Harry, what were your sort of first impressions of Jim when you
I just remember being there working on something with Gary, and Jim was were you there when I came? Anyway, there we were together. And the first thing I noticed about Jim is he was wearing a pair of actual Beatle boots, not the Hudson's Bay wannabe Beatle boots, but actual, you know, Beatle boots with the Cuban heel and the whole thing. And so I looked at his boots while Gary was introducing us. I said, hey, man, where the did you get those boots? And that was the first thing I ever said to Jim. And it was like the first brick in what was going to be a lifetime relationship, you know.
Now, the two of you obviously got together or got along right off of the bat by the sounds of things. The song that we came into break from was called Destination Earth, I believe.
Right.
It was by
right.
The Lost Souls. Tell us what that was. That was probably your earliest recordings, and what was it like putting that together?
Well, yeah, that's a recording so early that until you dug it up from wherever, or I guess that came from Gary, yeah, I wasn't, I'd forgotten that it ever existed. But at that time, a group out of Vancouver had a record out called Meadowlands, which was actually turned out to be Terry Jacks playing the guitar. And unfortunately, I can't remember the name of the group. I'm sure there's lots of people out there that can. But that Gary became interested in composing and recording rock and roll instrumentals. And so he set that session up. And I believe his brother Bill played keyboards on there. And I think that was recorded at the home of Rod Evans. I could be wrong about that, but it seems to me it was. Rod also was definitely a prime mover in the early days of the Victoria music scene, and then went on to bring many technical innovations into musical equipment and that. Another person that had a worldwide influence that came from Victoria.
Yeah, certainly a lot of Rod's good work. I mean, there's still people that have their hands on things that Rod
would
custom make and build for people.
That's right.
We've got our first caller on the line, Terry from Saanich, calling in. We're going to ask Terry to join us. Hello, Terry. Terry, are you there? Terry, are you there? No, I don't think Terry's with us. Terry has left us. So we'll go to see if there's somebody else on the line here that wants to join us. Hi, who am I talking to today?
I'm talking to Louise Glenn. How are you?
I'm great, Louise. How are you? Thank you so much for calling in.
Oh, no problem. I was just really pleased to hear you on the Ways, and your guests are great. And you asked for a memory, and I remember seeing Long John Baldry at the Purple Onion.
Actually, it would have been it was called the Stardust. It used to be the Club Tango when Baldry
Tango
came in for his three shows in November, I believe, of 70. I'm going to stretch my memory here. I think it's around 75, 76. Did three shows there, and it was called the Stardust Ballroom at that time.
That's right, and I sat just right in front of him at a little, it was like a dining room lounge sort of thing. It was great.
It was quite a neat spot, and, I think it was just one of those places where if anybody ever went there, they just really sort of got off on the whole ambience of the room and what it was all about. Well, Louise, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that memory with us. We're just going to put you on hold a second. We're going to get your name and put you in the barrel for those tickets. And, the Club Tango. Jim, what was that like for you playing in there?
Well, it was the Sirocco when I played there.
Right, the first time through. And this is at 1037 View Street.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, the history on the building, for those who don't know, it was built in the 1920s by the Shriners, and then during the Depression, unfortunately, financially, they lost it and then went into private ownership after that, but it was a dance hall for many years, and Jim was there in the early part of it as the Sirocco.
Yeah, that's right. It was a wonderful place to play. It's too bad it's gone, you know.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, some of these places are gone, but we're hoping to have Ian Diamond, one of the people who brought it back as the Club Tango, on a future show. He's been giving us a lot of information, but unfortunately, it started in Oak Bay, and the Oak Bay Centennial Committee's borrowed all of Ian's stuff, so we don't get a chance to get a hold of it till later, but we still will have some great memories coming from him. We've got another caller we don't have another caller right now, unfortunately. But what we do have is we've got, we're talking about the Sirocco. And for you, Harry, I guess was it the Sirocco where you were in there, or was it the Tango when you first went in?
Well, the Sirocco still, the sign still said Sirocco outside. But I guess by the time I was playing there, it was known as the Tango. And the first times I was ever in there, actually, I wasn't playing there. I went there to see the Wailers and other Seattle bands, or, you know, Paul Revere, whoever happened to in the shows that Red Robinson used to promote up and down the island.
That's right.
And then, of course, when the hippie years came along and that, well, I any musician from those days from Victoria must have been on the stage of the Tango at some time or other. So, I was in there somewhere.
Well, certainly all the pictures that we've received on the website, Royal City Music Project website, which for you, those of you who don't know the address, is www.rcmpsite.com. And RCMP is for Royal City Music Project. Log on and you can see all sorts of great pictures of the Club Tango in its heyday. Harry and Jim both in their heyday. There's audio, video, just a bit of everything. It's a real capture of the music history here in Victoria. We've got another caller here. We're going to go to, I believe this is, hang on here, make sure I've got the right line here. I believe we're going to Mike. Hello, Mike.
Morning, boys. How are you doing there, Glenn?
Good. Thanks for calling in, Mike.
Good. Just had my memories here just come in contact with two of you. I got a call early Sunday morning when we just had put together some brief plans for a birthday party, and I looked up a card I got at an evening you put on down at the Strathair Legends with early history of music in Victoria, and got pulled out your card, Glenn, and gave you a call of desperation saying we needed a band for an early afternoon birthday party happening, and you gave me a number of Harry there, and had Harry and the Toilers come in, and they put one heck of a blues rock event in that they're still talking about, and really deeply appreciative to you and Harry for bringing it together for us.
Well, thank you very much for calling in and sharing that with us, Mike. Mike, we're going to put you on hold, and we're going to give you a chance to get your information and take your name, and hopefully you'll be one of the winners of these tickets for you. And, yeah, Harry, still playing. And here I am at home. Mike's call was absolutely correct. I got a phone call. They were looking for somebody for a gig that day and gave Harry a call. He went in and filled in. So that must be quite gratifying for you.
It was a lot of fun, actually.
And you now play with your son.
Yeah, that's
right. And your son is the drummer.
Yep.
So you basically are a family of three generations of drummers.
That's true. Yeah.
That must be a proud moment for you when you're playing with your son. The reunion that he refers to was in 2004, and it was called A Night at the Tango, where four bands got together, not necessarily bands that actually played the tango, but mostly members that, who did at one point or another play at the Club Tango. All got together for a night of fun and frivolity, and a good time was had by all.
Sure was.
Certainly, when Harry was still playing the drums, I understand you're not doing as much drumming these days.
I'm getting a little long in the tooth now for drumming.
But he, you can see his probably one of his last drum solos on the site at on the RCMP site. So do drop by there and have a little look. Now, Jim, you've finished. You've been doing the Lost Souls with Harry. It brings you up to about 1967. Did you then sort of go on another hiatus, or what was your sort of plan at that point? Where did you move on musically after the Lost Souls?
Well, I did play with Morningstar. Harry talked me into coming back and sitting in, and so I did. And it all went from there. I played a little bit of rhythm guitar with him, and then we played at the universities. It took off, and we were playing up and down the island, and it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Now, between the Lost Souls and the Morningstar gig, Harry took a bit of a time off and sort of went and picked up with another local band called As Sheriff.
That's true. Yeah, I actually, to make a long story even longer, what happened was after the Lost Souls kind of hit the wall, which was for a number of reasons, We kind of took a holiday from bands for a while. And during that time, though, I went to a jam one night out in Gordon Head. And I remember that Grant Gislason was there and John Booth and a bass player named Carl Smythe. And a young fella, he was 15 years old then, named Dave Vidal. And another guy named Ross, who unfortunately, Ross, if you're listening, I can't remember your last name, but I still think of you to this day. Anyway, Dave Vidal, of course, was already starting to show a phenomenal guitar talent. And so we started going to 9 and the 5th and some of the other hip night spots and just jamming. And it was going pretty well and was definitely evolving toward a permanent band situation when, as Sheriff, we were looking for a new drummer because their original drummer, Peter Lohr, wished to leave to pursue other things. And so they asked me to join, and much to the dismay of my other bandmates, I couldn't resist. So I became one of the Sheriff posse for a while, and that was a lot of fun.
Now, the Sheriff recorded a 45 on London Records. Previous to your, your time in the band?
That's true. Let's see. Yeah, it was Dennis Shirk was the next drummer after myself, and it's Dennis playing on those on that recording.
Excellent.
And I think that I was becoming a little unreliable at that point in time.
Going through a transition in your life.
I wouldn't want to say I got fired, but
these things do happen, and of course, yeah. lots of stories like that and more. We're going to go to another break here right now, but what we're going to do is we're going to take you out to the break with a little bit of Morningstar.
People like to listen to Terry Spence with Talk It Over, 11:05 weekday mornings here on CFAX 1070, a Chum radio station.
Welcome back to a show, Remember When. I'm Glenn Parfitt, sitting in this week for Susan Woods. And my guests today are Jim Smith and Harry Creech. We'd love to hear from you. If you've got questions or stories you want to share with us, give us a call at 386-1161 or on your cell. It's star 1070, and we're taking all the people that call in today and putting their name into a hat for two pairs of tickets. The first pair to the Leonard Sample Band at the Central Bar and Grill on Saturday, June 24, 2006, as part of Jazz Fest International 2006, and also a pair of tickets to Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings at Market Square on Sunday, June 25th. So we're back talking about Morningstar, which is the next project that Jim and Harry got involved with. Now, you're talking about playing some of the venues. We talked about playing Club Tango and things like that. For you, Jim, in Morningstar, what was probably your most memorable gig that you did in Morningstar?
Well, we played at the university quite a bit, and we were really well received there. and I remember that being the most. I mean, we traveled all over the place playing, but going up there, people liked us and we liked them, and when you're in a situation like that, things come off real nice.
Yeah, there was some kind of festival there too, held in the main gymnasium, which our spot was right in the middle of the afternoon. It wasn't exactly the greatest spot, but that was one of the high points for that
Indeed.
Group. We killed them.
Yeah.
And then we spent the rest of the day, commiserating that we didn't have an evening spot when more people would have seen it. But, that was one of the high points. Definitely.
That was at the McKinnon Gym.
That's right.
That you had that at.
Yeah. And, I mean, every band in BC that was anybody was there, it seemed like.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway. And I think the headliners were a band out of Vancouver that had a hit at the time. I keep wanting to say the Stampeders, but I know it wasn't. It was
so somebody of some notoriety at that point. And there was a whole bunch of other local bands that played there as well, too. I think Sugar Cane played there.
Yeah.
I think Holy Smoke played there.
That's
and
right.
It was just sounded like a real fun afternoon up at the university for everybody to get involved with. Harry, you also had a chance to play outdoors at Mount Doug Park. What was that like? Because I see pictures of you on the website. And if you're on the site, look under a Morningstar, and you'll see Harry on the drums playing in front of what looks like to be thousands of people at Mount Doug Park. And my understanding through newspaper articles is there was 4,000 to 5,000 people there. What was that like for Harry?
Yeah, that was, well, I guess for us here in Victoria, that was, that was hitting the big time for us. I mean, it was comparable to outdoor venues in San Francisco at the time. And I guess we were all sort of, the scene here was modeled very much after the San Francisco. And we all thought of the Tango as our Fillmore. And Mount Doug was our Golden Gate Park,
And certainly you also involved or played at the first Love-In in Beacon Hill Park,
yeah.
If I'm correct.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, well, I was in Vancouver the morning that the first Love-In in Vancouver ever was held. I was staying over there with a guy named Gil Mathewson. And I didn't actually get to see the whole thing, but we were down in Stanley Park in the morning when the band equipment was coming in. And I'll never forget that the Grateful Dead came up and the Jefferson Airplane. And when the Jefferson Airplane arrived, they were all in separate limos. They weren't talking to each other. And they were in the middle of a heated band politics thing, you know, which was a total shock to me. We pictured all these hip bands as liking each other and helping each other out and stuff, you know. I don't know why I thought of that when I thought of the first love in Victoria, because maybe it was the rain of avocados and rotten fruit that we were pelted with. It might have been that. Yeah. But, you know, it was all in good fun, as they like to say.
Well, as long as the memories still stand out for you, as good ones. So we got another caller on the line right now who wants to join us with a memory. Hello, this is Lee.
Yes, this is Lee from Souk.
Hey, Lee, thank you so much for calling in. You have a story or a question for Harry or Jim?
Oh, yes, for you fellas, for both of you fellas. Did one of you earlier mention Terry Jacks?
Yeah, that's right. I understand that Terry Jacks played guitar on that single I was referring to. It was a tune called Meadowlands, which is basically a reworking of the Russian national anthem. And sadly, I can't remember the name of the group I'm trying to, but, you know, I got this microphone right in front of me here.
Was it the Chessmen?
It was indeed the Chessmen. That's right.
Yeah, because I understand that you see, I enjoy listening to music, and I like reading about people in the entertainment business,
right.
and I understand that Terry Jacks did have a band called the Chessmen.
That's right.
I mean, I was just a wee lassie back in the late 60s, so I wasn't familiar with that then.
Well, Lee, thank you so much for...
But I read that when I was older.
Thank you so much then, Lee, for calling in.
I was also wondering, I really like Terry and Susan Jacks singing. They're both good singers.
They certainly are. And thank you so much for calling in, Lee. We really appreciate you joining the program with us. We'll have your name go into the draw for those tickets as well too. Lots of great stories. And of course, Terry Jacks went on and played with the Poppy family as well too.
Yeah.
So a lot of memories, and I think at one version two of the Poppy family with a guitar player by the name of Norm McPherson was also started over here in Victoria.
Correct.
So Terry and his wife Susan, ex-wife Susan, have a real history here in Victoria. We're going to go to a break right now, and then we're going to take you out with, I think we've got another piece of music here, I hope. So here we go off to break, and remember, if you want to call in with a memory or something to share with us, please do. Call us at 386-1161 or on your... Hi, I'm Glenn Parfitt, sitting in this week for Susan Woods. This is Remember When, and what you were listening to was a little bit of Morning Star from, I believe it was about the 1970s, and in our studio today, it's Jim Smith and Harry Creech, both members of Morning Star, reliving some memories and some things of that have gone by in previous years, and we're talking about different bands that the fellows have been in. We stopped at Morning Star, and since then, Harry has gone on to work on some other projects, particularly one of note called the Salty Seamen. Now, this is hardly a band that's singing sea shanties, and without getting into a whole lot of detail, I think there's probably one really good way to describe a lot of the antics of the Salty
Seamen. Well, that's
true. And of course, that for those
Where's
who've
my
seen,
daddy?
Of course, for those that have seen the band, understand what that's all about and what's going on. We're gonna take one more quick call, and we're going to go to line 3, and I believe we have Carl on the line. Hello, Carl.
Hi. I was just wondering what happened to the original Tango Club, because my wife and I were swinging around in the 50s. Ed Hicks and his wife Irene opened the Tango Club on Oak Bay Avenue above the theater. When did it hang? Did it ever move to the Sirocco?
It moved down to the Sirocco Club in late 1965. The Sirocco changed to the Scope for the year of 1965. And then at the end of that year, the fellow who owned the Club Tango down in Oak Bay at that time, Ian Dement, depending on how you pronounce it, then moved it up to 1037 View Street.
Ah,
okay.
Yep.
I couldn't figure out why. I remember Ed Hicks started the club, and he was trying to get a band in there before the paint dried on the walls.
He absolutely did. He's one of the original names, and there will be more information coming out about that later on this year, and we hope to release the book on the history of Victoria's rock and roll and music scene. So if we'll put you on hold on the line, we'll put your name into the barrel, Carl, for winning those tickets that we're going to give away. Now, also as part of the Royal City Music Project, we have been recapturing a lot of the history, and what we've been doing is we've been interviewing a lot of the musicians, club owners, promoters, things like that. We've released a series of DVD documentaries. They're a little unique in that they're not narrated, and what we're doing is we're having these all being done in the words of the musicians themselves. Most recently, the two that are up for sale right now are the Holy Smoke compilation and soon to be released the Pharaohs compilation. Give you an idea, these DVDs are over 2 hours worth of information, everything from an informative documentary, outtakes, certainly vintage footage are on these, vintage audio, a real variety of information. And for those who are big fans of all this history of Victoria music that we've been promoting the last few years, these are a great chance to just get a glimpse of it, pop it in your DVD player at home, and have an overview of what's been going on. They sell for $19.95 each, and you can order them through Lazarus-Productions.com, or you can also go through email them directly, info@LazarusProductions.com, or you can call them at 380-1854. So certainly those DVDs have been released in a very limited amount are available. So if you've got a chance to go and purchase one of those, they're a great present for yourself, or if you know somebody that's really into local music history, a real nice piece of memorabilia for them. Also, too, there are 1,200 musicians on the Royal City Music Project website and over 500 bands. This year we are doing our voting for who will be inducted into the Victoria Rock and Roll Music Hall of Fame, located at Darcy's Pub. Ceremonies this year will be September 17th. That's a Sunday. It'll be Sunday afternoon, so those that want to come in and off the island can do so and enjoy the festivities. The voting, the ballots are out right now. There was 100 musicians selected out of the 1,200 that are listed on the site, and the musicians have been filling out those ballots and sending them in. And next Sunday here on the show, we'll be releasing the results of who will be this year's inductees into the Victoria Rock and Roll Music Hall of Fame. So that's been a real, you know, time capturing all this, and the Hall of Fame, I think people really need to know that this is not so much a competition of who's best or who's better. I think that was all done years ago in the Battle of the Bands. More than anything, this is to pay tribute to the people that contributed, and all 1,200 musicians contributed equally to this. Some became more successful than others, but all in all, without these 1,200 people, there wouldn't be these stories to tell, the great times that were had, and certainly all this information that we've been able to capture, because growing up in the 60s, music was just a big part of everybody's life. So we're going to take a minute to say thanks today as well, too, to our sponsors who help us promote the website and sponsor the website: Alpine Transmission and Auto Repair, DL Sound and Lighting, Lazarus Productions, Pacific Audio Works, and Jazz Fest International. And while we're talking about Jazz Fest International 2006, I think it's time to give away the two tickets, two pairs of tickets that we have. And we're going to give away the tickets to Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, to Mike, who called into the show. So Mike, you come down to the offices here at CFAX, and on Monday you'll be able to pick up your tickets for that. Going to be a good show. They played here last year in Victoria, sold out the Central Bar and Grill, which is why they had to get moved to Market Square. So you're going to see a great show. And the winner of the Leonard Sample Band tickets is Louise. So thank you to Louise for calling in. She'll be enjoying their show at the Central Bar and Grill, Saturday, June 24, 2006. Both of these are part of Jazz Fest International 2006, and we thank them for letting us be able to give those away and giving them to us for the show. Jazz Fest International 2006 is also sponsored by CFAX and the sister station Cool FM this year. So keep that in mind and listen for more information on both radio stations. And we're going to go have a little wrap up here. I guess we're going to talk to Jim, and we're going to ask Jim, what's your sort of your best memory of playing as a musician in Victoria? Your best, the best gig you ever played.
Best gig I ever played. Well, that's hard to dig that one out. A lot of them were great. I think we played not in Victoria, but in Prince George. That was one of my greatest memories of. Nothing could go wrong that night. It seemed magical, even somewhat spiritual. So,
yeah, if you could only get every gig to be like that in your whole career, wouldn't that have been?
Managed to avoid getting arrested. I'm telling you.
Well done for you.
It was a good weekend.
Well done for you. So you were both at the same gig. Now, for you as a, for you, Harry, what was your sort of favorite gig as a musician, personally, out of through your career?
Well, I'd have to say that. Probably the Tango reunion, actually. You know, I mean, we did some good stuff in the old days, but I kind of felt that the band that we put together for the Tango reunion and, you know, we sort of had the gods were with us that night. It was a great night. I thought everybody that played there gave great performances, and we were certainly not unhappy with ours. And, I'd have to say that now that has pretty well bumped off my earlier memories. It was a great night. It was nice to perform for people that, you know, that we'd known for many years. And,
So it must have been kind of fun to come off of the stage and walk into a crowd of people that were all your peers and friends and guys that you've grown up with.
It was. It was a fantastic experience. And if I had a loony for everybody that said, hey, I haven't seen you since fill in the year of your choice, or else the occasional person, I thought you were dead.
Well, you're certainly anything but dead, that's for sure. And certainly the example we got of the fella calling in looking for a band and having you go out and do it. The band that played that night was Morning Star 2004, which was Jim on guitar, and Harry was playing bass,
Harry's son
was playing drums, Newman Corey on guitar, and Little Ed Wright was fronting the band from Blues by Five. And certainly, yes, it was all bands played well that night, and we had an awful lot of fun. So when these reunions come together, you really want to join in and participate in them. Now, Jim, for you as a spectator, your number one musical experience that you were able to observe or see as a spectator?
Well, that would have to be the Beatles over in Vancouver. That was amazing.
Really, you were there for the show at Empire Stadium?
Oh, yeah. I was there. And it was incredible. It was the same for Elvis, you know, the same thing. It was just unbelievable.
So you saw both shows?
I didn't see both shows, no. Mm-hmm. I could have seen the Elvis one, but we weren't that rich in those days, and I couldn't make it for the bread, you know, to get there. So I didn't see it, unfortunately. Yeah. And when you think of who I knew, I knew Red Robinson, Norm Pringle. I probably could have got a photo taken with Elvis and his autograph and all that kind of thing, but...
Yeah, well, certainly Norm got his picture taken with Elvis. We've seen that one. Yeah. And also, you know, it was just... one of those things where if you were able to actually be there, it was a wonderful thing. I also heard, too, that Norm Pringle started off Tommy Hunter's career as well,
Really? Yeah.
So not only was he managing you, he also had some influence on some other people nationally as well. For you, Harry, what was the best gig you ever observed?
Well, that's a split for me. I'd have to say that going back and to the 60s, Jimi Hendrix, the Vanilla Fudge and Heir Apparent, in Vancouver at the Pacific Coliseum, and that was one of the greatest things I ever saw.
And a $4 ticket, too.
That's right, yeah. And Jimi Hendrix actually could do impossible things. You know, people forget because he's been gone a while, but still in my book and my son's, as far as that goes, he's still the best electric guitar player that ever walked on this planet. And I split the best gig honor with the Moody Blues appearance here at the Royal Athletic Park in the not-too-distant past, another one of my favorite bands. That was a dynamite performance and a very uplifting experience to be there.
Great stories. Well, thank you both for coming in today. We've got it closed now, but it's certainly been my pleasure to have you both in here today. Jim Smith, arguably Victoria's original rock and roller, and Harry Creech. Want to thank you both for your time. We're going to take you out with one of their projects, Morning Star, and be listening next week at the same time, and I will be back hosting again for Susan Woods. Thank you for listening, and remember that the show is sponsored by the Maritime Museum of British Columbia. Thanks today to my producer, Corey. I'm Glenn Parfitt. Bye for now.
Yeehaw!